Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. My name is Kevin Easy, Padres beat writer. I am in Arizona where the Padres play some team, I don't know, coming up. We're only going to talk about the Padres and Dodgers here for the rest of the season. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune, my boss. Jay, yes, I am in Arizona because the Padres play the Diamondbacks tomorrow as we tape this on Monday. They play them Tuesday and Wednesday. Well, yeah, we'll get to that, sure. Wow. Jay, we've been in this business a long time. And the media, and then now in this age we live in, social media, we as a species tend to hype things up. And I have come to be like, whatever, because it just never lives up. I mean, 1% of the time does something live up to the greatest. This was insane what happened over the weekend in LA and 7 of the past 10 days. You are a lot older than me, Jay. You have been around.
I'm sorry, a lot?
Jay, what did you think, man? Put it into some perspective for me.
You know, the one thing I was thinking about is, as you know, I watch a lot of European soccer and especially English soccer. And there's a lot of hype over a lot of the matchups that come up in soccer that among the big six teams, you know, Liverpool is going to play Manchester United or the Manchester teams are going to play each other. And it seems like almost all the time, at least in the last couple of years, those matchups end up just being crap matches. This was the exact opposite of that. And it's like, I was thinking yesterday, okay, they've played 6 incredible games in a row. Probably, I mean, it's what are the odds you're going to see that? Now it's on national TV. It's got the ESPN audience, you know, national spotlight, probably be some, now this will be the game that's crummy. And sure enough, it gets out to be a 7-1 game in, you know, middle of the game. The Oscars were on. I got to admit, my screen was split between the two. And I was probably at that point paying more attention to the Oscars than I was the Padre game. And all of a sudden, it got to be 7-2, 7-3, 7-5. It's like, wait a minute, could this actually happen? And we ended up with yet another classic game. So we went 7-7. I mean, the final score of Saturday's game, or yeah, the 6-1 game. I've lost track of what games were even what days. But the final score of that one game was misleading, as was obviously the first game, which was 11-6, but it was extra innings. Amazing that these teams could do this night after night after night. It's funny you say we're only going to talk about the Padres and Dodgers. You know, they don't play again for, I think it's 8 weeks now.
June 21st to 23rd at Petco Park.
Which is right after the U.S. Open is at Torrey Pines that weekend. And I know the Padres are home that weekend as well. But it just feels like such a long time that we have to wait. And I don't think that whatever happens in that series or beyond can, at least until October, can match what we saw these last 10 days, because they're not going to play all these games all jammed together. They're going to play 3 games in June, and then I think it's 3 games in August.
And 6 in September.
In September, but they're separated by a couple of weeks, if I remember correctly, not by a week or 2 or 3 games in this case. So I think we should all, and look, obviously Padre fans are extremely happy the way it came out, 4-3. I think even had it ended at 3-4, you know, the Dodgers not blowing yesterday's game / the Padres made an incredible comeback. I still think that's something that we should just appreciate what we were able to witness over the past 10 days, because it just doesn't come along very often. This was really special. It was really a lot of fun, except for all the deadlines.
That's, you know, Jay, since you bring it up, I saw a lot of people, including a national writer who I got in touch with and said, oh, been a long time since you've had newspaper deadlines, because he was among those petitioning for Padres Dodgers 162 times. Jay, I loved the last 7 games. I absolutely loved every moment. I had 4 stories going yesterday at the same time, because I was going to have to file at the end of the 10th inning with it tied. So I had a winning story, a losing story, a tied story. I got something in between there. Jay, I could not handle it. If these guys played any more often, I'm glad we go to June 21st and maybe get to write about just some normal games as if the Padres are capable of that. You said that the Dodgers blew it, and both of these teams yesterday had depleted bullpens. The Padres had at least two key guys, and really four or five guys they didn't want to pitch, which is why you saw Nick Ramirez not only pitching in the sixth, but left out there. And the Dodgers blew it by only scoring five runs off him. They needed to score 10. And guys like Tim Hill, Emilio Pagan, even Drew Pomeranz, who pitched later, there was no intention of pitching those guys in that game. Dave Roberts had three guys that he wasn't going to pitch. As a matter of fact, he didn't pitch in that game.
Including Kenley Jansen.
Right. And so it was one of those games. And that's what's amazing. I mean, Jace Tingler was absolutely willing to sacrifice that game. Right. It was just one of those. It's like, well, look, I want to win this, but what are we going to do here? I need these relievers for later in the season.
Yeah.
And so that was what was incredible, that they came back and the Dodgers cooperated. I also thought it was incredible single after single. I mean, guys just started getting hits, something that this team hadn't done. It wasn't like Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a three-run jack or something, which wouldn't have been surprising. It would have been amazing on its own. But it was just, let's get it done. And then, of course, you know, who was the guy who drove in the winning runs in the eighth inning of the finale in San Diego was Eric Hosmer. Eric Hosmer gets a sacrifice fly yesterday. He's pretty clutch. He's pretty big in these moments, at least, you know, last year and this year. Jay, it was really a pleasure to have seen all seven of these games. But I want to say again, I'm very happy that they're going to play some other teams here for a while. The Giants are in second place. The Diamondbacks did they sweep the doubleheader yesterday, or was that just the non-official no-hitter?
The Diamondbacks are
a pretty darn good team right now.
They had two shutouts.
That's right.
Because Zach Gallen pitched a shutout, I believe a one-hitter.
A one-hitter, which counts. The one-hitter counts.
Right, in the first game, and then Bumgarner with his no-hitter in the second game. So yeah, they now, of course, the good news for the Padres is they don't have to see either one of those pitchers, although they have not shied away from Bumgarner. I don't know where that came from yesterday. The Braves must really be a wreck, or else Bumgarner really straightened himself out, because he has not been good.
Speaking of the Braves being a wreck, I think that we should probably pause here and not necessarily take a bow, Jay, just because all we are doing is being rational. But you know, the Braves are in trouble right now. Or I'm sorry. They're not in trouble. The Braves are not playing very well. This is like basically it was them or the Mets in the West or in the East, and it probably still is, right? The big winner this weekend was perspective, Jay. The big winner was perspective.
There's no such thing as perspective.
You're right. By next weekend, the Padres will have split Arizona and then dropped 2 of 3 to San Francisco, and the sky will be falling again. But, you know – here they are, took 3 of 4 from the Dodgers, and wow, things are looking pretty good again. When losing 3 to the Brewers, it was all over. We could go down the list. I'll tell you what, I went over the numbers of the pitchers that they faced, and I broke down those pitchers' numbers in the starts they've made against the other teams, and then the numbers they made against or that they've had against the Padres, basically identical. The Padres faced incredible pitchers in that time. And did you see what Woodruff did yesterday?
I was just
about to say. He allowed one hit. I mean,
yeah,
those are good pitchers, man.
No, that's, They
could have touched up Adrian Hauser, and that's about it.
Yeah, nobody's hit Woodruff or Burns this year. And the Padres, I mean, look at what they went through over the weekend. And they won games that were started by Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, and Dustin May.
Dustin May is just wow.
I mean, the Dodger pitching is incredible. And like you said, the Padre pitching has been tremendous too. I mean, Musgrove, it was a weird game yesterday. The error obviously really hurt him. But he limited damage. I mean, it was the second and third innings. He threw, you probably know the number, it was in the 60s in terms of number of pitches, close to 70 pitches, I think, in those two innings. But he only gave 66. Up two.
Yep.
But he only gave up one run in each of those innings, and that paid off down the road. Same thing with Craig. I think they had the bases loaded in one of the innings against Craig Stammen. Dodgers left the bases loaded four times, I believe, in that game yesterday. I mean, those the Padres right now are awful with the bases loaded, but the Dodgers weren't any better yesterday.
And we got to say that a big thing. Dodgers gave away some stuff. The Dodgers made some errors, key ones, just like, you know what? You know what? The Dodgers are saying the same things right now that the Padres were saying 5 days ago. It was really uncanny to listen to Dave Roberts and some of the Dodgers players, and it was like, wow. And I pointed out in one of my newsletters, just, you know, every once in a while, let's take a step back and look at other teams. I just think that helps us appreciate the team that we watch all the time more, to say, oh, okay, they don't suck, or, oh, they're not the best.
But we also know that in another couple days or a couple weeks or a couple months, the Padres are going to suck again for a period of time. And maybe it's for a couple days, maybe it's for a week. I mean, I don't think this team shouldn't be too bad for too long, because it's got enough ability, but there's going to come a time where they're going to be lousy again. But there's also going to come a time where they're going to rip off probably, you know, a 14-3 stretch or something like that. And it's, you know, I just think the big picture is so important, and we all get caught up in it at times. But, you know, the Padres are still, they're 13-11. At this point, you know, you hate that, oh, if the season ended today stuff, especially when they've played 24 games. But they do have the second best record among all the non-division leading teams. So they would be in the wild card game if it was played on April the 26th. So it's a long, long way to go. I think we've seen in these seven games against the Dodgers, the Padres are a very, very good team. The Dodgers are a very, very good team. And I would not expect that to change throughout the season. I think both these teams are going to be in the postseason. And unfortunately for one of them, and I still think, unfortunately, it's going to be the Padres, they're going to be stuck in one of those one-game do-or-die wild card game. But that's, you know, that's a product of baseball. There's no reason to worry about that now. I think we should enjoy, you know, what we saw over this time frame. The Padres, I mean, start with Thursday night. You know, it feels like it was forever ago. That double play, you kind of forgot about it after everything Tatis did with the bat over the weekend. But just remember, the Padres won the game on Thursday night because of absolutely incredible double play started by Cronenworth, and Tatis making the great play at second. As Jay Singler said, it was like so matter-of-factly the way he said that, where he's like, you know, and then Tatis was able to do this because he's a freak. But he is. And that's what happened. He made a perfect throw. And, you know, he's had trouble throwing, but he made a perfect throw. And the Padres won that game when the Dodgers probably thought, as the ball left that bat, that they were going to win.
Especially when it hit him. And I mean, wow, that was just really well played. And I don't know. I don't know what is happening. Someone told me today they're not worried about it. Okay. All right. Fernando could have had a couple more errors yesterday, if not for Eric Hosmer. I mean, you know, it was great that he turned that double play, and that is classic Fernando Tatis. But what is also becoming classic Fernando Tatis Jr. is throws that are just a little bit wicked. They're wild. But anyway, that was brilliant. We should talk more about the home runs.
Well, I was going to say, and then we'll go to Friday's game. And, you know, on the whole thing with the anniversary of his dad hitting the two grand slams at Dodger Stadium, which still blows me away that he hit them off the same pitcher. No matter how many times you hear about that, it's like, where was Davey Johnson during that inning?
It's like it was 1909 instead of 1999, right. You know? Did Sandhill throw 400 innings that year?
I know, I know. But on the 22nd anniversary of you know, his dad setting a record that we can absolutely say will never be broken. You know, Fernando Jr. hits two home runs off of Clayton Kershaw, no less. And Yu Darvish was outstanding yet again, you know, overlooked because of Tatis.
And another fantastic play, actually a couple of them in that game, but the one in the seventh by Manny Machado, whose defense has been, I mean, forget amazing. I almost said I don't even need to see Nolan Arenado, but that would mean I don't have perspective. I just think Manny Machado is so good that we don't appreciate it sometimes. He's been incredible this year.
I agree. I said this when he first got here, and it's grown even more and more true over the past couple of years. He is far better defensively than I think anybody could ever have known if you didn't watch him all the time.
Watch him all the time.
Right, mm-hmm. But you watch him all the time, and the plays that he makes and how easy he seems to be making them, even though you know it's incredibly difficult and there are so many guys. If you care about the Gold Glove Awards, which I could not care any less about because of a couple people who have won multiple Gold Gloves that I won't mention. One of them is a shortstop who's in the Hall of Fame, but I will not ever care about the Gold Gloves. But it's unfortunate for Machado that he's coming along at a time where Nolan Arenado is in the same time. And so Machado he's not going to end his career with, you know, like the 8 Gold Gloves that he very well could have had he come along at a different time or played in the other league or, you know, stayed in the other league or whatever. But that's irrelevant. What's important is how important he is to the Padres and how great his defense is.
Yeah, that was amazing that he would get off Kershaw. And then the next night, off of Trevor Bauer in the first inning, and then in the sixth inning, the one in the first inning was like a pop fly. Trevor Bauer thought it was a pop fly. Yeah. I kind of thought it was, though the outfielder gave it away that he wasn't really going to get to it. And then, of course, at Dodger Stadium, it doesn't matter if there's 60,000 people or 15, man. Every fly ball is a home run at first. Then the one in the sixth inning, whatever. Let's not even get into the whole peaking thing, whatever. You'll never get a straight answer on it. I don't think it necessarily helped. And if it did, that pitch was so insane. And he reached out to hit it. He reached out to hit it, not pull it, but it was in left center to the same spot as the other pitch. I mean, the new swing follow through, mm-hmm. that he sort of let go, but not really. It wasn't the wild swing.
Right.
Mind-boggling what Fernando – speaking of making things look easy, Jay, Fernando Tatis Jr., wow.
He makes hitting look easy. But the one thing, and I posted a story a little while ago that Tom Krasovic wrote about how the weekend basically belonged to Tatis. And the point that Tom made in the story was, even if he knew the pitch was coming, and look, I went back and watched that at bat again today. The first pitch was down the middle. The next four pitches were away, 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 away. Then he threw another fastball that was kind of low down the middle that Tatis fouled off, and then he threw a slider. I don't think that it took a great stretch for Tatis to figure that Bauer was going to throw a slider there on 3-2, and it was going to be, or even if it was a fastball, it was going to be away. So he was probably going to cheat a little bit away. But even, and the point I was about to say that Tom made is, even if you knew that pitch was coming, how many guys could do what Tatis did with that pitch was to – and it was in deeper left center field than the first one was.
Right, it was.
Probably a couple sections over into deeper left center. And I mean, it's amazing. And he's got, what is it now, 46 home runs in 158 mm-hmm. games. And I think it's 31 stolen bases, 126 runs scored. He still hasn't played 162 games. He won't hit that until this weekend.
What he did, and I'm sorry, I should have. I really should have. I didn't get too bogged down in like stats because I didn't want to bog down our podcast here because I can get a little crazy with that. But one thing I should have is had the list of what Tatis did, because he also drove in runs with ground balls, with singles, mm-hmm. With an infield single. He stole three bags, two of them yesterday. He stole third. Dodgers are pretty easy to steal on at this point. You know, he made things happen too. That's you know, the power and all that. It's otherworldly, but he makes things happen. And I wish I did have all the stats, but suffice it to say, he had an incredible weekend. And I, sometimes we overblow things for stories, but I did not overblow for my feature for Sunday's paper. The idea that Fernando Tatis having fun is not only a beautiful thing to watch. I mean, it truly is. Like, he plays baseball like you and I did when we were 8. You're throwing the glove around. You're chasing. You're looking at butterflies. I swear Fernando Tatis Jr. is looking at butterflies. It's things that if anybody else, the coach would be like, hey, pay attention. Like they were to us. But when he's having fun, he's better. And guess what? the Padres are better.
I picture you as a little leaguer being completely like running around. Nobody, you know, like pay attention guy.
Actually, the truth is, Jay, I was an incredible little leaguer. Like, this is what gives me perspective. I was awesome. And then pitchers grew. The field, the bases got longer.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, guys were throwing like curveballs that were looked like they were going to hit you. And I was hitting balls that got to shortstop that used to go over the fence. And I sucked.
I was the same way. I wish more people acknowledged that about themselves.
Right.
I was the same way. I was really, really good, especially my last year in Little League. And then, like you said, the field got bigger and it was
what happened to first base?
Right. But the other thing about Tatis is you mentioned the steals bases, and Kras pointed this out in his piece as well. That's why the Dodgers, you can't just say, well, we'll walk him, we'll pitch around him, because you walk him and it's at least a double. And it might even be a triple. I mean, they pulled off the double steal. Was that last night? I think pulled off the double steal late last night, which was obviously big. So that's the thing. You can't just say, well, we'll put him on first base, because he's not staying on first base, especially against the Dodgers, who really struggle against to control the running game.
Here's an underappreciated thing about him too, is like, and this, I think I mentioned this earlier, like Jorge Mateo's faster than him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But everybody in the stadium on his first steal knew he was stealing.
Right.
I think there were three pickoffs. And he stole the base anyway, right? He waited till his jump was right, and he stole the base anyway, like on the fourth or fifth pitch, and you thought he was going before that. And then he does the pop-up slide. Now he's sliding in feet first. Where people are like, gosh, I wonder if he knows how to slide feet first, right? Not only that, he looks like he's playing 40 years ago, because he slides and he pops up. I don't know, his dad taught him that when he was four or something. Gosh, he's just amazing.
I know, that's the thing. And the Padres in general, it came up on the broadcast last night on ESPN, and I think Vasgersian asked Buster Olney, or maybe it was the other way around, but they said, does anybody run the bases the way the Padres run the bases in baseball? And the answer was no, that they couldn't think of another team that was as good running the bases as the Padres. Very aggressive. I mean, Bobby Dickerson is, you've talked about him before, and Glenn Hoffman, I think, was the same way. Especially toward the end last year. I mean, that's something that Tingler has talked about. We want to be aggressive. I mean, I thought Dickerson made one move earlier in the year where it's like, boy, I didn't think he should have done that. It worked out, but it was like a really close play and there was nobody out when he sent a runner. It was like, boy, you really want to do that there, but that's the way they want to play. And it does put pressure on the other team, and the other team is going to make mistakes. If you keep doing that, you're going to get the guys thrown out, and it might even cost you a game at some point, but it might win you five. And I think that's the thing about playing for the long term. This team is built to win games over a long period of time. It's not about winning a game on Tuesday and a game on Wednesday. It's about winning games all year long.
Jay, gosh, that's a great point. And I'm not telling people not to live with every inning, to not live with every game, because that's what being a fan is about.
Sure.
But you're also going to be wrong when you do that sometimes, if you're not wrong, you're not at least understanding what the team is trying to do. And winning a game in April or May or even June or July sometimes is not going to be the aim, because they have the knowledge about, you know, hey, who's hurt, who can't do this, who can't go first to third or second to home, what reliever can't go. And I'm telling you, they have absolutely put an emphasis on that this year, if you're paying attention, that they're going to be healthy, that they're going to do things to push themselves, be it in spring training, and now we're in the season where, hey, we're going to learn from this and we're going to be better. This isn't about making the playoffs anymore. It's about, you know, making it to the World Series and winning the World Series. And
don't you think that's a confidence that comes from the confidence that they now have as an organization and as a team, obviously, that they think they are going to be in the playoffs, that they don't have to, that if they do lose, look, they're never trying to lose a game. We don't ever want it to, I don't ever want it to sound like that. And I'm sure they don't either, but there are times where maybe you're not giving your best effort to win a game. I think last night was a case that was not their best effort to win a game. Having Nick Ramirez stay out there when he clearly didn't have it was not the best effort to win a game. Hey, they won anyway. But if they had lost, okay, they would have lost, and it's a game, and it would have been disappointing. But the idea is obviously that they think it's going to pay off down the line, and that they're good enough where if they lose a game here and a game there, it's going to pay off down the line where they're going to win several more games because of these moves that they're making. Hey. And the hope is that you're healthier in October. Both teams were shorthanded this weekend. I mean, Bellinger is out right now. Austin Nola's out. I'm not comparing the two, but Will Myers didn't play yesterday. AJ Pollock didn't play yesterday. McKinstry, who's been outstanding, is hurt and he didn't play. There were pitchers on both sides who weren't available. This was not October baseball. It just felt like it. Because both teams are so deep that they're able to play, these games and stand up against each other, even when they're not at 100%.
Always good points, boss. Always good points. Do we have anything to say about the Arizona Diamondbacks? Because
I wasn't going to say anything about the Diamondbacks. I was going to say that I think it's interesting the Padres, these last three nights through their big three starters, Darvish was outstanding. Blake Snell, we didn't even get into him coming out of the game after 87 pitches, if that was good, bad. That seems to be sort of a long-term type of situation. I get the sense they don't have any confidence in him at this point to go beyond about 90 pitches. And that's where he was when he came out. And look, Pierce Johnson had been really good in his last, I think, four outings in a row. He might have given up one hit or two hits or something like that. I wouldn't say Pierce Johnson got shelled. I mean, none of those hits were particularly hard. It just happened to work out that he got hit. Tim Hill couldn't get out Seager. It kind of got away from him. Musgrove yesterday, oddball start, as we said. And then what I was going to get at is now we see Chris Paddock again. And it feels like forever ago that he pitched. And it seems like every start's a big start for Chris Paddock.
That's where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
Right. Which was, but Snell was also a good one. Cause to me, it's actually one of the big questions. It kind of got lost in this series. That happens a lot when you're like the beat writer, you're covering the team. You're like, man, there's a lot of stuff here that's falling through the cracks. And one of them is Blake Snell, but we got time to address that because it is interesting. It's like, look, big picture, this was not the point in the season where they were expecting him to go six repeatedly and beyond. On the other hand, he's wasting pitches. He's getting ahead and then losing battles. Yep. He's giving up two out runs. Even when he wins those battles, it's in five or six or seven too many pitches. And then over the course of a game, it's like, oh, now he's at 90 and we're through at five innings. Yeah, legitimate to at least say, hey, could he have stayed in that game? But let's go back. This guy hasn't thrown seven innings since before he had arthroscopic elbow surgery at the end of the 2019 season. He came back, he threw like three starts, never went more than like 50 pitches or something like that. And then in the playoffs, went to like three innings in a start and then relieved that year. Never got into the seventh, never threw a full six. They're trying to build him up. He's in his own head right now. Mm-hmm. Okay, it is what it is. Here's the question coming up. If the Nelson Lamet, who I saw play catch after his bowl, he had played catch and then he played catch again the next day, if he's back, now you got six guys. So we'll see. That's what brings me to Chris Paddock. And I'm not saying he's in danger of going to the bullpen, but every start seems to be pretty big. If Ryan Weathers is going to keep pitching like he is, because you're not taking Ryan Weathers out of this rotation if he keeps pitching like he is.
Right. And that's the other interesting part of this series is Weathers will pitch on Wednesday. So there you've got your two guys who are, obviously the two candidates when everybody's healthy. If you're going to have a five-man rotation and Lamet's going to be in it, and hopefully he's healthy enough when he comes back to stay in it, one of those two guys isn't going to be around. In terms of the rotation. Now, Weathers has probably got a little bit of bullpen experience. Paddock does not. All things being equal, maybe Paddock stays in. But at this point, you wouldn't say they're equal. I mean, at this point, Weathers has been a better pitcher.
And at some point, they have to be thinking about Ryan Weathers' innings. The guy pitched in Fort Wayne when Fort Wayne was low A. Then he pitched at the alternate site. Then he pitched in the playoffs. And now he's in the major leagues.
Right.
He's not going, where's he at now? 20 innings. He's, let's say he was a starter and he went, you know, six innings every start or something like that. He's got like 10 starts left in him. So he's not going the full year in the rotation. But right now, I think you're riding him if he's still pitching like this. Mm-hmm. But you bring up a good point, and it's what people in the organization talk about, is he might be better suited to come out of the bullpen, and he's shown us that he can come out of the bullpen. And what if he could give you six innings a week coming out of the bullpen? This bullpen has been overworked. Now they're going to have some more off days in here, but it's just very interesting.
Yeah.
Look, no, Dinelson Lamet, there's not a doctor out there. People, you know, oh, they didn't get an MRI. No one thinks this guy has a torn UCL. Look, could it happen? Sure. I mean, it happens all the time. No one thought the doctor, the Padres aren't always lying to us. No one thought Mike Clevinger, not a single medical expert, thought Mike Clevinger had a torn UCL until after he pitched in the playoffs. We don't know what's going to happen, but it looks like Dinelson Lamet's going to be able to come back. He may just have to learn how to pitch with a little twinge there. Right. So a very interesting week coming up for Padres pitchers. That's the thing to look for probably here.
Yeah, I agree. Cause then you've got the three main guys lined up again for the weekend against the Giants. It's almost like with these two off days, it's like college ball. Darvish is the Friday starter and Snell's the Saturday guy and Musgrove Sunday. And then Lamet is eligible to pitch again
Sunday.
On Sunday. So you would figure he would not pitch Sunday, but he could pitch Monday.
Right. Because you wouldn't push Joe Musgrove back 8 days.
No,
right?
Not another day.
I think that's what we're looking at.
Lamet could go Monday, and then you've got and then you've got the question with Paddock and Weathers. You got another off day coming up.
You got another off day for Thursday. Right.
So, yeah, a lot of guesswork. I noticed later there is one stretch later in the year where they play 20 straight games. I knew that would do it. But May 21 to June 9, they do not have an off day. So
I did not. Wow. I hadn't noticed that one. That's incredible.
I never had either. And I was just trying to look at stuff earlier and see who was doing.
So that's right after the stretch of, cause here what happens is you have the two off days in 4 days, which is more than they had in the first 25 days.
Yeah.
And then you have six games a week for 3 weeks. And then you're telling me right after that, you're going to start the stretch of 20 games in a row.
Correct.
Okay.
And then there's a day off. And then there's another stretch of 13 straight, which ends with the Dodger series. So you're talking 33 games in 34 days right now. At that point, I mean, not now, but after this stretch. So that's another thing that I'm sure they're going to have to keep an eye on as we get into the middle of May.
That's Mackenzie Gore season, baby.
Yeah, Gore, Weathers, all hands on deck. But anyway, that's a ways away. I think we've gone on long enough. I hope everyone enjoyed hearing us talk about Dodgers, Padres. Obviously, probably not quite as much as you enjoyed watching it, but we will come back on Friday, I guess, right?
Friday. You know, if my second shot doesn't shelve me, Jay, okay?
I hate to even say this. I fared very well on the second shot. So I'm hoping, I'm knocking on some wood here for you, Kevin. I'm hoping that's hoping that's the case for you as well. Are you telling me I should line up a guest maybe on Friday just in case?
Yeah, get Sam Farmer back on. He can talk about the Giants.
I'm going to call John Shea. He can talk. We can plug his Willie Mays book before Father's Day. It's a great book.
So. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us. Talk to you later.